All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5.
Yeah, come on.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? It's a way back Wednesday, and quite frankly, we didn't do a whole lot of homework, research, or polling the audience. We just decided today, because Jose is filling in for Nick, that we were just going to go with do your best, anything before the year 2000. Jose is going to be Nick, which means he's just starting his list now, so we're going to give him a pass till the third hour.
If he's really going to be Nick, he's going to be like, hey, Siri,
yeah,
list 8 songs prior to 2000 that people might like. Boop, boop. Making list.
Yeah. Give me some credit. At least I looked it up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's Jose's over there Googling, like, songs of the 90s, because that's all he needs. Fresh Prince is on your list. I'm punching you in the gullet.
Or Nick, and then Nick would be like, nah, Siri, do a list of songs that I would like prior to 2000. He'd try it again, because he, like...
Yeah.
And then eventually the listeners would give him, like, four of the eight that he needed.
Yeah, you could always go that route, Jose, just let the listeners do it, because that's what Nick does as well, so...
Yeah.
No judgment. This is a judgment-free zone for you, because, you know, short notice for you. It's new.
No doubt. But we're happy to have you. So Jose's here, along with Barry, who's here. I'm here. So the usual suspects till 4, ready to go. Big show, one wild card game down, one to go, as the American League was decided. I was torn last night because of the fact that I hate the Yankees, but I wanted the Indians to have a tough series. So I was on the fence a little bit going back and forth during that game, but based on how it started, I didn't think it was going to end the way it did.
Yeah. I thought for sure when they got down 3-0 that it was over.
I did too.
I really did. And then, of course, but I will say, it's not that I was extremely prophetic, but I was like, don't worry, Yankee fan. Santana will give you those runs back. And sure enough.
Boy, he did.
Bottom of the first, gave back all 3 runs that started over. The other point last night made for me was what I've been lobbying for a while now. Whether some agree or disagree with me, but I have been stating on this show ever since we started talking playoff rotations that I want Brad Peacock coming out of the bullpen because of 2 reasons. One, he's done it, and 2, he's been effective in doing it. And last night was a prime example of why you need a guy that can come in and give you 4 or 5 quality innings, because now New York has to go face the Cleveland Indians. And they're in a hole going into the series because their bullpen has already been taxed. Their bullpen is already tired. So with a guy like Brad Peacock that can come in and give you 4 or 5 quality innings, because this offense could do exactly what the Yankees did. This offense could get down 3-0, and that's not insurmountable for them. Think about the comebacks that they had this year in the late innings. But you need a guy that can hold it down. And if you start patch milling your bullpen, then you might be screwed the rest of the series. But that's the perfect reason why Brad Peacock could come in and give you those innings. So it kind of made my point. I still agree, I concede the fact that a lot of people will tell you want your best arm starting the game, and I get that. But this is why, because I feel like the Astros have a riches in the rotation after you get past 2. I think that they might be the deepest rotation from 1 through really 6, if you really want to be honest.
They truly have a luxury not a lot of teams have, because they're not just Mike Fiers type starters. They're pretty decent starters, quality starters that they can plug in. And like you said, it's not 4 or 5. They can go, you know, maybe 6 deep.
Yeah, and they've got, I mean, if we're being honest, they've got a 2-1s, a 2, and 3-3s. And I say that 2 would be McCullers, but if you want to say Brad Peacock is there too, because he's pitched like a 2.
This year, yeah.
For the year. Mm-hmm. That would be fine, but then you're talking about your 3s being McCullers, who has ace stuff and could be, you know, easily as a 2. McHugh and Morton both have pitched like a solid number 3 starter in any other rotation in the American League. So this is a deep rotation, and that's why I don't think you're missing a whole lot if you have Peacock as your I mean closer in the second inning, come in and doing what he needs to do, you know, starting Morton or starting McHugh or even McCullers, you don't lose that much, I don't think. But
no, but you also got to, I mean, for as much as I hear what you're saying, the other thing is you got to tip your cap to the Yankees bullpen because they did one hell of a job last night.
I'm telling
you what. 13 strikeouts and doing what they did in relief has never been done before. It's never been seen before in a playoff game the way they did last night. They ran out there and they mowed them down and they kept the Yankees in the ball game until the big bats got warmed up. And I got to say this, everybody's going to talk about the Judge home run. Everybody's going to talk about the Gregorius home run that got him back in it. The one I enjoyed the most, even as a non-Yankee fan, was after he got his tower buzzed, yep. Brett Gardner not only taking him deep on the next pitch, but taking the time to glare out there.
Took a peek a couple times. I loved it. Yeah, you're right. That was great.
That was great baseball stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the first game of the postseason.
Yeah.
And it's 3-3 after one, and you're just like, man. And I mean, you know what? Agree with you on the Yankees bullpen. Actually, you know, hats off to them, but hats off to Joe Girardi. He managed a hell of a baseball game.
If he doesn't go get Severino when he did, that game could be over in the first inning because there were still men on base and plenty of runs to be had for Minnesota.
Yep. And he pulled the triggers at the right times. Yep. He made the right moves in the right situations. And, yeah, man, hats off to him. He managed a hell of a game. He earned his money last night. A lot of times managers, and I've heard it said before, it's not something that I would have thought of, but I've heard it said by experts in baseball that'll say, you know, a manager is probably good on his own for 1 to 2 wins a year.
Mm-hmm.
That most of it is just don't get in the way, don't do anything stupid. He earned his money. I mean, he could be responsible for that win last night.
You ready for this from the first inning last night?
Yep.
81 pitches.
That's crazy.
46 of which were strikes. 3 home runs, 2 singles, 1 double, 3 walks, 45 minutes.
It's nuts,
for
man.
Inning number 1.
I know. When it got done, my wife was like, is it like the fourth inning? I was like, no, that's one. That's one in the, what?
I kept looking at it because I was going back and forth between the Rocket game and the baseball game going, oh my God, it's 9-something and we're in the third inning?
You really do love basketball.
Well, I was just checking in on them for a lot of reasons.
I didn't even peep it not one time.
Yeah, I was going back and forth simply because it was the first game. I wanted to see what OKC was doing. I wanted to see how the Rockets looked early. And because, as you and I were talking in the production meeting, the abbreviated preseason means they do have to actually play more real rotational players. But
yeah,
for the most part, you're right.
Harden played like 21 minutes, right?
Yeah.
18
yeah,
or 21?
He and Paul played serious minutes. Plus, I wanted to see my guys. I wanted to see Craig and Bull get back out there. And then when I flip back after the abomination of how long it was taking to get through that game, did you see David Robertson when he came in and was pitching and Gary...
Sanchez
gets hit in the Sanchez?
Oh. Dude,
I tweeted it. They have the 5 stages of grief that Robertson had on the mound. First was surprise. Second was anguish. Third, I mean, all these different facial expressions. And then he covered himself in the groin.
And he bends down. My favorite part of all that was when it was all said and done. I thought the irony is Robertson looks at the umpire and goes, I don't have a ball, which I thought is kind of hilarious if you consider everything.
Yes, there was a tie in there for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But the Yankees win. A great season for the Twins. Take nothing away from a team that lost 100 games the year before. Paul Molitor should get a lot of serious consideration for Manager of the Year. But I think for everybody expected the Yankees to win this. Now that they have, we'll see what happens because now the Yankees get ready to take on the Indians as your Astros get ready to take on the Boston Red Sox. And tonight, the second wild card game, your pick to be the wild card was exactly that, the Colorado Rockies, as they visit Arizona, which is the sexy pick in the National League to be the sleeper for the World Series by some regards now.
Yeah, I believe so. They're, they're top to bottom. They're tough, man. I mean, Greinke needs to be better than, you know, Greinke needs to be what he's capable of in the postseason. And they may be a force to be reckoned with, you know what I mean? Because their lineup, I think, you know, is potent. And they can
Goldschmidt
hit.
Goldschmidt and Martinez and,
Those guys can hit. I still, when you look at, I mean, the Dodgers pitching is ridiculous.
Yep.
There's no doubt about that. The one thing that I kind of worry about from the hit is their lineup. I mean, it's been inconsistent at best. down the stretch. It's why they've struggled. You know, their pitching hasn't been great either. But I would say that in the regular season, anyways, the Nats probably have the deepest lineup and the most complete pitching staff. So I know Arizona's the sexy pick.
Scherzer, you got to worry about that hamstring.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crazy thing. You got Washington and Chicago, and both teams are dealing with big-time starters that have issues with a leg.
Yep.
So Scherzer's got the hamstring. He says he just tweaked it, didn't pull it. He wants to pitch. We'll see where that goes. But the Cubs dealing with it as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean Jake Arrieta's got, you know, they said what? He's going to be held out to the second half of the series.
Yeah, that might be too late.
And that might not be a long enough series.
I pulled up runs scored. So, obviously, the Rockies had the most at 824. Second was the Cubs. Third was the Nats. Fourth was Arizona. The Dodgers were sixth in the National League in runs scored. So, not great. You know what I mean? It's going to be fun. No doubt about it. I'm picking Colorado because that's what my heart. Right. But my head says Arizona's going to win the game tonight.
Yeah, I definitely think that just like last night's game, I think the overwhelming favorite is Arizona. We'll see how it goes for Colorado. If that game was in Colorado, I might have a different opinion. But
actually, I think John Gray has kind of owned Arizona in Arizona this year. I think he's had two starts.
But you know who's owned John Gray? JD Martinez.
Yeah,
Martinez has faced him like four times and hit two bombs. And
yeah, I mean, you obviously pitch around Martinez, but I think otherwise, John Gray has done pretty well against Arizona.
Yeah.
So that's going to make for a fun baseball game. Too bad I'm going to miss it. I'm going to be driving to
your
San Antonio,
second favorite city in Texas.
Okay. And then I've got a show tonight that I have to do, so I'm going to miss all of it.
Oh, boy. The lucky leprechaun is here.
Oh, look at AJ.
What do we owe this treat? All tucked in and ready to go.
Two fancy pants. I like it.
Wait, some dry cleaner lost out on starch today. So we've got a busy show for you. Jake Kaplan of the Chronicle is going to come up next. He's going to talk a little baseball. Barry and I love baseball, so we're going to also start breaking down Astros and Red Sox. Chris Sale is going to take the hill for Game 1 for the Red Sox against Justin Verlander. Should be a whole lot of fun. If you want to join the show, 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. You can call, you can text, or you can hit us on Twitter. Back with a whole lot more. Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
A new restaurant to go to? Visit culturemap.com to get the latest restaurant and bar news.
I hope you're hungry.
From Culture Map food editor Eric Sandler. Is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas. Here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarrara.
No Nick Jose as we continue to roll on a Wednesday, which is a way back Wednesday. And I guess I'm going with the first hour. Therefore, you're hearing Tom Petty because I just took... rest in peace mode for Tom Petty. The fact that was a huge loss. The fact that it actually hit a heartstring for AJ means it was impactful because not many things do besides his wife and kids. So I thought, you know, my wife loves Tom Petty. We'll go with Tom Petty for Way Back Wednesday. So I did now seven songs. Jose, I'll be interested to see which one you drop or if you work all eight in. But I did eight songs from Tom Petty pre-2000. How about that?
I like it.
And Jose's still working on song number one. We promoted this yesterday, and he's been so damn busy, which I told him, which was better than the alternative. But the busiest man in the Chronicle Sports Department these days is none other than Jake Kaplan. He is covering the series that's about to begin between your Astros and the Red Sox. He put out there yesterday on Twitter, in case you missed it, his preliminaries for who he thinks is going to be on the playoff roster, who's not. I also see that A.J. Hinch mentioned yesterday that they had moved some guys to Florida for training to stay ready in case they're needed. But without further ado, Jake Kaplan joins us from the Chronicle. Thanks for spending some time with us, man.
Yeah, how are you guys doing?
Doing all right. Not as busy as you are, but like I said, that's probably a good thing, right? Getting ready for this series.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's a better postseason than Major League Baseball. So, you know, last night was a great start to watch that game in New York, and excited to watch tonight's game, and then get the big Sale Verlander matchup here at Minute Maid tomorrow afternoon.
All right, Jake, let's talk rotation. So A.J. Hinch comes out and says Verlander's going to get the start in game one against Sale. Keuchel's going to be game two. I think we can all agree it's probably Peacock in game three. I'm more curious of what happens in game four, assuming that it's, you know, 2-1, you know, it's not a sweep. What are your thoughts on the game four starter?
Well, I don't know if they haven't defined game three yet, so it's tough to really say. I mean, I would consider Brad Peacock and Charlie Morton the favorites for three and four. In which order, I don't know. Hopefully we find out today, but we may not, as the managers kind of play this cat and mouse game through what they say and what they don't say. But, yeah, I mean, I think it'll depend on what the series is, what the score of the series is. If it's 2-1 in favor of the Red Sox, I think you would see Justin Verlander on short rest. If it's 2-1 in favor of the Astros, I think you'd see whichever of Morton and Peacock didn't pitch in game three. But, you know, a lot of innings to soak up between now and then that will determine that.
All right, let's talk playoff roster. I tipped everybody off, and if they want to see it, go to @JakeMKaplan on Twitter and see what you put out there yesterday. But A.J. Hinch said yesterday, who is it, Kemp, Stassi, and who else did they send to Florida? Are there going to be any surprises?
Martez,
right. So are there going to be any surprises or things that are going to kind of catch people off guard in terms of what that final playoff roster is going to look like for the opening series?
I don't think there's any, at least, you know, if you've been following me or reading me, I don't think there's any surprises so far. You know, I thought Tyler White would get the nod over Tony Kemp just because of the right-handed bat potential off the bench versus David Price in the middle to late innings. And I picked Juan Centeno over Max Stassi as a third catcher, which is now a certainty. So really all they have left to decide is how they want to fill out the pitching, whether they want to use Lance McCullers, Colin McHugh. Those are really the only answers we have yet to learn.
I found it interesting you had 14 position players. What's the process or the thought process behind that?
I just don't think you need as many pitchers in the postseason when you have off days between games two and three and games four and five. You know, you can extend your pitchers a little bit more. And, you know, Justin Verlander, you can expect to go deep. So I just don't think there's a need to carry an extra arm just to carry an extra arm.
So Liriano pitched well enough in that late flurry of games to earn a spot, in your opinion, in that bullpen?
Yeah, and I think part of my thinking and him making it is that you just need a lefty just to have that threat when John Farrell is making his decisions on who to pinch hit and so forth. You know, whether Liriano gets the big spot against, you know, Benintendi or Devers or one of their big left-handed bats remains to be seen. But I think at least just for the threat of having a lefty, he's their best option.
What's the update on Josh Reddick? How's he doing? How's that back?
You know, they expect him to be fine, to be available on Thursday. They're not really declaring anything definitively until after he goes through the workout today. He went through yesterday's workout, and he didn't talk to the media after, so it's hard to know how he felt. He should talk to us today after today's workout. You know, I think he'll be available. I think the bigger question is, will he start against Chris Sale? That's a tough guy to have your first at bat in 10 days against. And Reddick, you know, in the past has struggled against lefties. He did well against them this year. I think if he had played through the season, through the end of the season, the last road trip, he would have been in the lineup for sure, just because he gives good, even against lefties, he gives really good at bats. But given it would be his first at bat in 10 days, I'm not sure he would start Thursday, but we'll see.
As good as he's been at home this year, you're right. Coming back off of a break, you don't want to see Chris Sale in a playoff game. That might be tough, but they, you know, he's been a big part of their offense. With all that being said, and again, like I said, I encourage people to follow you on Twitter, but break down the series for us, how you see it going, and what are the keys?
For the keys for the Astros are to hit Chris Sale and Drew Pomeranz the first two games and jump out to an early lead. You know, Boston is, I think I'd give Boston the edge in the bullpen game, and so you don't want to have to face them if you're the Astros with a deficit. But, you know, tomorrow is a huge game, obviously. I mean, if you know, the if the Red Sox win, that really changes the how people look at the series. The Astros win, it puts the Red Sox in a really tough spot. So, you know, jumping out in front against the starters is key. And I think the Astros need to find a way to control the running game. Their catchers were the worst in baseball at throwing out base stealers this season, and the Red Sox like to run. So that's definitely something to watch, too.
All right, what's your prediction?
I'm not a big prediction guy, but I'll give you Astros in four. I think, you know, if not four, then five. I think the Astros have the better roster. I think they're the better team. I think the Red Sox are pretty good, and baseball, the postseason has so much randomness involved that anything can happen. But I think ultimately the talent will win out, and I don't think the Astros are better than the Indians. So if that's who they face in the ALCS, I think they'll be in trouble. But for this series, I give the Astros the edge.
Jake, I'm curious. I know you're an Astros guy, but what are your thoughts on Bauer getting the start over Kluber in that Indian series?
I thought it was interesting. It definitely surprised me. But from what I read this morning, it sounds like Kluber asked to stay on regular rest. And because that off day, because the game two starter gets two off days, really, between his starts, they could go Kluber two and then Kluber in game five if they want. And then if not, if they win before five, they can use them in game one of the next round. So it makes sense, especially with how Trevor Bauer's pitched in the last 2 months, but still surprising to see anyone but Corey Kluber in that first game.
How do you see that series playing out?
It's going to be a really good series. I think the Indians will win just because I think they're the best team in baseball. But the Yankees are really dangerous, as we saw last night, and their bullpen is loaded with power arms. So, and we saw last year how important shortening the game with bullpen guys is. So it could be a surprise series, but ultimately I would pick the Indians.
That's good stuff. As always, from Jake Kaplan. We know you're busy, my man. Get back to work, but thanks so much for spending some time with us. That's Jake Kaplan of the Houston Chronicle. You can follow him at Jake M. Kaplan on Twitter. A great follow and lots of good information on your Astros and on baseball in general. We're going to have much more on the show for you, but right now I want to tell you about what's going on today for you sports fans that are big fans of soccer, especially Dynamo fans, because the Dynamo are taking on Cruz Azul Thursday, October the 5th, in the 2017 BBVA Compass Dynamo Charities Cup at BBVA Compass Stadium. Stop by the following BBVA Compass branches today between 3 and 5 for your chance to score tickets to the match. You can stop by the BBVA Compass location in Sugar Land, the one at 290 in Rose Hill, one in Atascocita, on Buffalo Speedway, in the Medical Center, Champions, Sterling Ridge, and Kingwood. Today, between 3 and 5 p.m., they're going to be giving away tickets and your chance to score them for the 2017 BBVA Compass Dynamo Charities Cup between the Dynamo and Cruz Azul. BBVA Compass, creating opportunities.
You know who it is.
It's Kareem Jackson, and you listen to ESPN 97.5.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Jose in for Nick, Barry and I in studio, getting ready for more baseball tonight, then more baseball Thursday and Friday, and a whole lot of fun as playoff baseball is upon us. The Yankees setting the tone with what was a pretty good display of power and pitching last night if you're a Yankee fan or a baseball fan, simply because their bullpen was strong and so were the bats as they got three long balls. We want to get a little bit more baseball. You and I love baseball anyway, but
yeah, I know a lot of people don't look forward to, you know, baseball as much, but God, I love baseball and I love this time of year.
It's a great feel.
It's a great feel, and if you're a fringe baseball fan, watch the postseason.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that if you're kind of on the fence about how much you like baseball, the postseason will get you hooked on baseball.
And again, I've never been a huge fan of the Yankees in New York and all that stuff, but that atmosphere last night, that crowd right from the first pitch was into it. And, you know, you could just feel that little extra when Gregorius hit the home run in the bottom of the first, like, look out, it's about to get just absolutely chaotic. This is going to go crazy for the next, you know, 8-plus innings, as that was still in the first inning. But that, you're right. That feel of playoff baseball is so totally different, and it can swallow you up and take you in and take you for a hell of a ride for the rest of the playoffs if you just stay dedicated to it.
Yeah, yeah, it's fun. I'm curious your thoughts on the starting Trevor Bauer over Corey Kluber. I mean, for me, when I saw him announce that, I get it, they wanted Kluber going on. But what about Carrasco?
Yeah.
He is really their second best pitcher.
And he's been on fire.
Now, I did see this thing because I was watching the MLB Network this morning, and they were also talking about Yankee Stadium. They declared it back, which I thought was interesting. I was like, really? Did it ever go anywhere? I mean, the crowd shots I found to be hilarious because it was Jersey Shore all over that place.
And excessive drinking.
Yes. Yes.
Every time there was a celebratory moment, you could find like 3/4 of the crowd going for the big gulp of a Bud Light or...
So they were talking about Trevor Bauer and Corey Kluber, and down the stretch, Bauer pitched as well as Kluber. And after the All-Star break, second half, 15 games, he went 10-2, 3.01 ERA, and Kluber went 11-1, obviously with a 1.79 ERA, much better. But those numbers aren't bad. But if you look at it, his numbers for the year, not nearly as good. You know what I mean? Like overall for his 2017 campaign, he had a 4+ ERA. I think it was almost 4.20. But he pitched well down the stretch. But when you look at Carrasco and how well he pitched for the year, he went 18-4. Or excuse me, that's Kluber's numbers. He went, 18-6 with a 3.29 ERA.
Great year. Finished the year strong. Proved to be every bit as worthy of praise as the other two guys, and that's saying something. It's going to be interesting to see. Look, we talked about this from a Red Sox perspective when there was a lot of rumors coming out of Beantown that they made hold sale for game two. And for a lot of reasons. But again, as a baseball aficionado, I want to see Verlander sale as much as possible.
Sure.
That's just quality baseball right there. I just don't like catering to the national networks for the days off. The days off, these guys are used to having one day off a week at max, and that's on a Monday or a Thursday in most cases. They're used to playing. They're used to setting their pitching and their rotations and their bullpen and everything like that based on those things. And now with all these multiple days off, I think it changes things. And I don't want to say, you know, an advantage, disadvantage. It's different.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of that.
And, I mean, dude, Carrasco, you talk about Kluber pitching well down the stretch. Carrasco in September, October, 5-0 with a .84 ERA.
Yeah.
Why do you not let this guy go out there? And it's not that it would be on short rest because the last time he pitched was like the 28th.
Yeah.
So he's got plenty of rest. That part doesn't make sense. I get if Kluber, like Jake Kaplan was saying in the previous segment, if he wants to go on his normal rest, I get that. Okay, if that's how you're comfortable,
right,
that's fine.
Now, yeah, that's him coming to you and requesting that.
Sure,
you honor
do
that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's fine. But why? I mean, I guess because Kluber's hot, but Carrasco's hot. It's a great problem to have.
Sure.
But I just don't understand why, you know, having Bauer go first, that didn't make sense to me.
But. Now, I've backdated when I'm going to send this, but I am sending Trevor Bauer a box of drones. I'm hoping that he does try and open it up right about the end of that Yankees-Indian series, just in case,
right,
just to see what happens. Because,
right.
I mean, look, last year, that guy looked to be as hot as anything going, and then he had the whole drone accident,
yep,
cut his hand open, and then, you know, he was bleeding on the mound, and that became a problem. But,
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see because, you know, if there is a team that's coming in hot with the pitching staff in the National League, it's got to be Washington, the way Strasburg has stepped up in his pitching, the way we know that Scherzer's capable of pitching. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, those three pitchers in Cleveland, you know, that streak happened for a lot of reasons, but one of the main reasons was they got great starting pitching down the stretch.
Right. Yeah, I like it. The other thing I was curious about when you're talking about the Astros and the rotation, because similar to what, you know, AJ Hinch came out and said, well, we had to make a decision and both guys are worthy, yada, yada. And I get what Verlander's done down the stretch. But don't forget how good Dallas Keuchel is at home.
Yeah.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I make that point to say that when you have, if you look at it at the schedule, you know what I mean? Like if you're looking at days off and rest and all that, if you pitch in game two, mm-hmm, if you pitch in game one, you can pitch in game 5 with no issues.
No problem.
But you could do the same thing pitching in game 2 as well.
Because of the days off.
Right. So the question becomes, who do you think you might need to save, right? Because if you get down, obviously you're going to, somebody's pitching on short rest and it's going to be Verlander most likely in game 4.
Right.
If you're down 2-1.
Yep.
But my question is, with Keuchel pitching as well as he's pitched at home, he's got a sub-2 ERA at Minute Maid. Why not maybe consider running him out there first and pitching Verlander second? Because then you get the match, you swing the matchups in your favor later on.
Can I, my first knee-jerk reaction to that is for the possible backlash if it doesn't work out. The fact that you've got to, you know, you don't want, like we've talked about, not only do you not want to leave bullets in the gun, but you want to let your big gun go first. And with Verlander's numbers since he has become an Astro, with his numbers overall, when he's been in the postseason, this is the reason you went out and got him.
Right.
And he's more of the power pitcher. I think for all those reasons, that's why you're going to go Verlander first. But you're right. I mean, he's not, yes, he would be second guessed, but you could, the numbers stack up to say he wouldn't be, you know, questioned too long, or there is justification, should I say, for putting Keuchel in that position as well.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is if you needed him, Keuchel has pitched on 2 days rest before.
Mm-hmm. And he's not a power pitcher, so he doesn't have to have that massive fastball.
That's right. And he's pitched on short notice before and performed well in doing so. Verlander, I don't think has ever pitched on. I mean, when I was looking it up, I couldn't find where he's pitched on less than 4 days rest.
Even in the postseason with the Tigers?
I'm looking at his days rest. This is for his career. And yeah, I don't see it.
Huh.
So,
well, look, it was a tough decision for AJ Hinch to make. We know that. And we did get some audio from AJ just talking about how the pitching order and the rotation.
It's really deciding between two really deserving, really good guys. So I didn't have a lot of stress about it other than we had to pick an order. You know, Verlander has pitched extraordinarily well since he got here. The 5 stars, we've seen have been exceptional. Dallas has pitched very well recently as well, and obviously has a long history here. So for us, matching up, we decided to go 1, Verlander 2, Keuchel, which leaves open the option at the back end to do whatever we want. It ends up being a game 5. So it wasn't that stressful, but I just needed to make a decision.
And you bring up the point, which is the biggest one in that, is that they have the luxury of having 2 ones.
Yep.
2 aces. So then he does give himself more options should he need them, and you hope he doesn't. But, hey, there's not many teams that can go, oh, yeah, well, you know, I have my options, and even if I burn Verlander on short rest, I can still bring back a Keuchel in a game 5 if I needed him. A lot of teams would love to have that luxury.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, like I said, I feel like if you look top to bottom, the Astros might have the deepest rotation, 1 through 6, because that's what they have right now, is 6 guys that can take the hill. They might have the deepest, not the best bullpen. They might have the worst bullpen in the American League in the playoffs, but they might have the best rotation 1 through 6. So I guess you play to your strengths. But
you really think they might? I mean, the thing is it used to be that the bullpen was such a strength for this team. And it's just, is that just because of the fact that with the tired arms for a while and because they hit that rough patch that people are not having the confidence in that bullpen that at one point people thought if you got to the 6th inning with the Astros with a lead, they were pretty safe?
Yeah, I think part of it is because of their inconsistency. I mean, when they're on, when Gregerson is on, his slider's unhittable, but he's just inconsistent.
Yeah.
Divinsky, after the All-Star break, was this year's Will Harris and became inconsistent. Harris has been injured, but also inconsistent. Giles has been the most consistent guy, but he's your closer, and he's really your only power arm in that bullpen. He's the only one that can get in the upper 90s consistently, and in the playoffs, you need a guy that can come in and blow the fastball by some guys. And so these guys went on, all those guys are just fine. You know what I mean? But that's the problem,
is
they're more inconsistent.
If they get back to pitching to their full capabilities, then that bullpen is pretty respectable. But because there's so many question marks and inconsistencies, that's what you worry about. But let's not forget 100 Mile Giles, because we're not talking upper 90s now. Todd Callis will tell you right now, that's 100 Mile Giles.
Well,
when he gets the 100 Mile Giles, he can bring it.
He'll get there once, maybe an outing.
You know I worry about that guy.
I know.
That guy scares me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think when you start looking at specialists out of the Astros bullpen versus some of the specialists in the other bullpens, I mean, I don't trust Liriano, and I don't know that anyone should trust Liriano, even though he pitched better down the stretch.
He did, but again, in this series coming up, their secret weapon is David Price.
No.
David Price has been big time as a lefty coming out of that pen.
Yeah, and that's a great weapon to have when you look at what happened last night. Wouldn't it be great if you had someone like, oh, I don't know, Brad Peacock to do that? I don't know. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there.
That
I don't think I've mentioned that before, but I think that would be great.
I know I've seen it somewhere before. I'm just, okay.
Just going to hammer it home until maybe it'll come true.
Stop the hammering! All right, so we're going to continue to roll on. We've got plenty more to get to in the big show. The Rockets played last night.
What?
Unless you were me, I don't know many people that were flipping over and back and forth. Sean Salisbury was really ripping anybody that was watching preseason basketball last night. But hey, I know how you Kool-Aid drinking Rockets fans are. You are thirsty for any time you get a chance to see Red Nation. They were in OKC last night, so we can talk a little basketball. Michael, we see you. We're going to get to you when we get out of this break. We're going to talk a little basketball with you as well as the listening audience around Houston. So stay right where you are. The Usual Suspects back with a whole lot more right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Jose in for Nick, Barry and I in studio on a Way Back Wednesday. I have hour number one. We just kind of generically said anything before 2000 and... Rest in peace, Tom Petty. I just went with 8 Tom Petty songs.
Yeah, and I wanted to do some house cleaning. I tried to go back and see because you made me second guess the numbers I had about Verlander not starting on anything shorter than 4 days rest. And so you were saying, well, check the postseason, and so I did.
Yep.
And there's only one instance where he went on less than 4 days rest, and it was game one of the ALDS versus New York in 2011. But he only pitched one inning. So he started on September 30th, pitched one inning through 25 pitches, then came back in game three in that ALDS and started the game, went 8 innings, ended up with a 5 ERA, but they won the game 5-4. So that's the one time. So I don't even know. I don't even have the game in front of me. So I don't know if he got hurt or why he was pulled after an inning. But that's the same thing like what happened last night with Severino. If they need him. Yep. Yes, he's available to go because he only pitched one inning. I mean, he
it was a long inning.
It was a long inning, but it was like an extended bullpen session. So he would be available, I think, on short notice as opposed to going out there and throwing 5, 6, 7 innings.
I think the fans would be interested in what you found out too in terms of his playoff runs over the years, the good ones and the bad ones, because he's had some really good ones and he's had a few less than stellar ones.
It's funny when you go back and look because I think the knock on Verlander is Verlander's got to perform better. 2006, he didn't pitch all that well. His ERAs were in the fives and above. The same thing in 2011. But 2012, his worst game was game one of the World Series where they lost 3-1. He went 4 innings and gave up 5 earned runs. Other than that, I mean, he 8 innings and an earned run, 9 innings, no earned runs. And then again in 2013, the same thing. He went 7 innings, no earned runs, 8 no earned runs, 8 one earned runs in 2013. If you're getting that Justin Verlander, I like the Astros' chances.
And to Jake's point when Jake Kaplan was on, if you missed it, go back and listen to it on the podcast. But you know he's your horse innings-wise. He's going to eat up a lot of innings for the most part, and that's what you're expecting. Maybe that's why that they're not worried about how many pitchers they're going to carry. So the Astros and the Red Sox getting it underway tomorrow. In the first of two at Minute Maid Park, I believe it's 3:08 tomorrow, 1:08 on Friday.
Is it? Okay.
The times, yeah.
All right.
So while that all was going on last night with the Yankees and the Twins, there was also a Rockets game. I still think it's just very weird that the Rockets are already knee-deep in preseason and played last night. But I did tune in. I was checking some things out. Abbreviated preseasons now in the NBA. They're trying to start earlier to eliminate the 4 games in 5 nights and all that other stuff. But Rockets, in a lot of ways, pretty regular mainstream form in terms of shooting threes. 24 of 55 from downtown in the first game.
Isn't that nuts?
Yeah.
That's just like, what? That's just to let you know once these guys start clicking and the chemistry is there.
And CP3's knocking down threes already. He just right from the get-go, yeah. And then he was finding Harden, who was knocking them down. You know the usual suspects. Hey, look what I did there.
Hey, look at
between Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon and those guys, Trevor Ariza in the corner was knocking them down. They're a deep team. What I liked more than anything else, even though it's preseason, and again, I keep ripping the guys on Twitter that watch these preseason games and think it's like a regular season game and they can break it all down. But the one thing that I did like, because you lost Pat Beverly, between CP3, PJ Tucker, and Luke Mbamute, they will get up in your ass. They will defend some people. And that's what you and I have talked about over and over. We know they're going to score points. They'll only go as far as they can go stopping people. I like what I saw individually from those three guys last night defensively.
That's good.
I saw James Harden block a shot from behind, too.
Yeah. He had a couple of steals, too.
Yeah, he did.
I just happened to glance at the box score, and I thought, okay, 21 minutes, had a couple steals.
You know what else he had a couple of?
Turnovers.
I quit.
Oh, yeah.
Lost the ball. Yeah, I quit. You guys go ahead and get that layup. A
couple of my bads on defense.
Yeah.
He's going to lead the league in my bads. That's for sure.
So I saw some things yesterday leading into the big kickoff of NBA on NBA TV where they're talking about who's your MVP for this year or who could it be. Michael wants to chime in on a guy that's kind of under the radar, but's kind of teed up for could have a really good year.
Yeah.
Michael, what's up?
What's going on, guys? Yeah, that's the question I had. Once LeBron retires, or maybe even this year, am I wrong for feeling like Giannis is the next face of the NBA?
Sir, I'd like you to recite his full name for me three times fast.
No, Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Oh,
not close enough.
That was all right. That wasn't great. That wasn't bad.
It's a good question, Barry. I'll let you take it first.
I don't know if he's Westbrook is the guy. You've got...
Kyrie might break out in Boston. You don't know.
Yeah, you've got Kyrie. James Harden is
Kevin
still...
Kevin Durant still in the league.
I mean, there's a lot of guys ahead of him. Maybe 5-7 years after that. But, I mean, he's going to be one of those guys. But, LeBron is just on another level than anyone else. I mean, you look at what Westbrook did. That's great. But LeBron is LeBron. I mean, there's just... I think we're always so quick to be like, who's the next Jordan? Who's the next LeBron? But those are those guys for a reason.
But in terms of like looking at a guy that you want to take the next step so he can be considered at that high level,
a
that
superstar.
Elite level,
yeah.
He's got to get a jump shot, and it's got to be consistent. And that's the one thing, Michael, appreciate the call, by the way, but that's the one thing, Michael, you got to look for with this kid. He's got all the tools. He's got freakishly long arms and legs. He's athletic, but he pulls up for a lot of threes and a lot of jump shots that aren't even close. And I know a lot of people like to rag on Westbrook for that he's a volume shooter, but he's a scorer, not a shooter. If Antetokounmpo is indeed going to take that next step, then that's what he's got to work on. He's got to prove that he can be a consistent jump shooter and knock down jump shots and outside shots, because I haven't seen it from him. And the other thing is, when they gas him. They run him until he's got nothing left in the tank, and then he goes to the free throw line, and he misses a lot of free throws because of it. Those are things that he's going to learn, he's going to have to work on when he wants to elevate to that next level.
Yeah, I just don't know that he's a guy that'll be considered a LeBron James or a Kobe or Jordan, but he's a guy that will be considered a superstar.
Yeah,
or he has the potential to be a superstar. Just not, I mean, those are so rare.
Did you see that his shoe contract deal is up, or it's going to be up at the end of this month? And Adidas literally backed up a semi to his place.
That's crazy.
Bunch of Yeezys.
Yeah, bunch of Yeezys, bunch of limited editions. You know, anything and everything was just right there. And he still, to his credit, said, I'm not going to sign on the dotted line. I'm not making a decision. But this makes it more interesting. Whereas Nike, I guess, their route to trying to recruit him was they rented out like one whole floor of a high-rise in Milwaukee, which there are only two, got the whole floor knocked out and designed the whole thing with like action shots of him and his family and everything like that, and said they're going to design a shoe for him and he's going to be their next signature guy. Again, I leave this with you guys because, you know, Jose, you're a shoe guy too, and Barry, you are too, but I look at it as saying it's one thing to get this guy under contract because he's going to be a superstar type talent, but is he the kind of guy that you give a signature shoe to? I don't think he's that big yet. I don't think he's that wide-ranging. Now, well, you may want to play the Greek card and say, hey, overseas and in Europe, he's going to get a lot of attention too, like Adidas did with Porzingis. I don't know.
I think you have to get in early, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
If you think this guy is going to be a superstar, you go ahead and sign him up now and give him a shoe contract, because then if you can lock him, I mean, that's kind of what happened with Curry when he got his deal. He was on his way, and everyone knew that he was going to be a star. It was just a matter of, you know, getting to that point. And I think it's the same thing with the Greek Freak. He's going to be a star. It's just get him now.
Yeah, that's the point I was going to make as well. I remember they were trying to get Curry, but they weren't offering Curry a signature line. So ultimately, Curry went with Under Armour.
Yep.
And they're probably trying to avoid a situation like that happening again.
Well, here's the other thing that people forget about that. Curry had a series. He couldn't stay healthy. He couldn't get a max deal because he had hurt his ankle so many times. His trainers and other people blamed Nike's shoes. So he didn't want to wear Nikes anymore. But at that point, Under Armour was just looking to try and get one guy to help them kind of elevate and get on the map. And boy, that worked out well for both sides, because now he's got a major deal and they've got a major front person that's won championships and done a lot of good things. So it's worked out for Steph Curry. But when you look at the money being thrown around, and when you're talking about money for shoes being more than the money that they're getting from their individual teams for playing in the names of James Harden, Kevin Durant, guys like that, it's crazy.
It is. And there, you know, and these shoe companies wouldn't be doing it just to burn money. I mean, there's a return on the investment.
Return on investment is definitely there.
Getting if they're throwing that kind of money around.
And some people say, like I said, Porzingis. But look, not only does he get you the New York market, but he gets you everything overseas.
Yeah.
Greek Freak's the same way. He's gonna have a whole, you don't realize his following outside of the United States. And with what we've seen that's happened in China in the last couple of years, ever since Yao, in terms of how much gear they're buying, how many shoes, how important that stuff is. The money is aplenty out there, and that's why
it's
crazy.
It's cheap. I mean, it probably cost them, you know, $3 or $4 or $5 to make a shoe that they charge $150, $200 for.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not spending a lot of money on manufacturing these shoes.
It depends on how long the deal is with the sweatshops that they're using.
But I mean, they spend a lot more money in marketing and getting the, you know, getting the guys. That might increase the value or increase the cost of the shoe if you factor all that in. But just straight, you know, cost to manufacture those shoes, it's got to be cheap. So
especially when they're getting out of
leather.
That's
why it's so profitable for them.
They're getting out of leather now, and everything's synthetic and everything's nylon. Yeah. And yeah, it's cheaper and cheaper. So that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, Greek Freak's one to watch for the MVP.
Yeah, somebody had a question on text that we can hit on the other side because we've got to go to break. But somebody said, can y'all explain the new Harden rule a little more? So we can touch on that on the other side as well if you want.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Cool.
So that, look, 1 hour in the books. Plenty more to go as we got two more hours of the big show. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line. You can call, you can text, or you can hit us on Twitter. At Barry is funny. At Pac-Man Joel with a K. Jose, you are?
ParJ94.
Okay, ParJ94. Reach out to Jose. He loves the love.
That is the dumbest Twitter name. Like, what? Why?
Why don't you just go with something really complicated like at the producer Jose?
ParJ94.
It's part of my last name.
So let me get it. You were born in 94.
Yes.
Your last name is Pardita.
Yes.
Your first name is Jose.
Yes.
So the J.
See?
Okay. Was JPAR94 taken?
No, that was the first thing I tried. I don't know.
It's just dumb. You gave zero effort in coming up with that. I'm embarrassed for you.
Could have gone even par. Went on a golf
tournament. Hey, I'm embarrassed for you, Jose. That's just a shame.
All right, well, we got what we got.
All right, guys. I want to tell you about a company that's out there to help you in your time of need. We all know that Hurricane Harvey has come through and wreaked havoc on our city, and it's caused some damage that you have to fix now. If you had a home that was flooded or damaged, and you're looking at that home and you're thinking, do I fix this up and run the risk of it flooding again, or do I sell this home and then maybe start over, buy a house that maybe isn't in a flood zone? And that's where Gulf State Home Buyers can help you guys. They're going to come out and they're going to give you a free, no obligation, cash offer evaluation on your home. And when you're dealing with Gulf State Home Buyers, you need to know that you're dealing with a company that has been awarded the Distinction Award by the Better Business Bureau the last 2 years, 2016 and 2017. These guys are here to help the community, and that's what their goal is after these after the storms. And I tell you what, the folks at Gulf State, they went out and they started a donation drive. They were gathering supplies for people that needed them. They want to help, and that's where they're going to help you in making this decision. So you get the estimate on how much it's going to cost to repair your home, and then you find out how much you can get in cash from Gulf State home buyers when you call them. 281-717-6100. Call them and let them help you. Like I said, free, no obligation, cash offer. Evaluation on the house. They've got an entire team of attorneys, title companies, a whole in-house staff ready to help you, but you got to make that call. Get that right information, get that cash offer, and then you can decide, do you want to fix it up or do you want to sell it? But you're not going to know if you don't call them. 281-717-6100 is Gulf State Homebuyers, or hit them up on the web, gulfstatehomebuyers.com. The folks at Gulf State Homebuyers, they're there for you, and together we will all keep Houston strong.
ESPN 97.5.